Katie, you're my best friend. She's like, really? I'm like, no. Not at all.
That is kind of mean. I'm
not her best friend.
For the longest time, my wife couldn't say that she loved me in front of people. Like, she was too fucking embarrassed. So she'd be like, but in front of like a group of people, she'd be like, Fred, I really like you. Like, that she felt was okay.
That's funny. And with that, welcome to Fantastic Neighborhood episode 22.
Hi guys, today's episode is brought to you by this awesome, awesome, super strong Knob Creek we're drinking.
Yeah,
Knob Creek, for when you want to get shit-faced.
Or when you want to spend a lot of money getting shit-faced. But as usual, we are broadcasting from beautiful Brooklyn.
Again.
It's hot. It is hot and gross.
Yeah, the internet has no weather.
Well, I guess we'll just dive right into Consumption Junction. Hey, Consumption Junction, what's your dysfunction?
Shut up. Shut your filthy mouth.
So you played Penny Arcade on the rain-slick precipice of...
Whatever. Yeah.
Trace.
It was a $5 game, so I was like, ooh, that sounds awesome.
Did you play either of the Hothead ones? They're occasionally, like, a dollar.
I played the first one. I played the demo, though. But the first one was...
You and your demos.
This was a while ago. Actually, it was like 5 years ago when it came out, right?
It's been a minute. That was like the first game on Xbox Live that cost like $20.
Yeah. So I played the demo
been
of it.
3 years, maybe? Three and a half, something like that?
Well, at the time, $20 is a pretty big commitment for an episodic title. So I was like, let me try the demo. I didn't love the demo, but it was cute. For Rainflake 3, I bought it because it was $5. And honestly...
Did you play anything that that company, that studio has done before? They did Cthulhu Saves the World and Breath of Fire 7.
So Cthulhu Saved the World came with Precipice.
Yeah.
So I have it in my Steam library right now.
I have both of those.
I've never played Breath of Fire 7, although I played some of the earlier Breath of Fire games, but Majesco or something.
No.
Right?
This is...
it's a different title.
No,
then.
I'm sorry. Breath of Death.
So both of those came with...
It's like generic 7. They're like, riffing on JRPGs.
Sure. So,
you know what riffing on stuff is like, right? We do that. Remember that Pitbull thing?
No, I don't remember. I heard it was good, though.
You could take a picture of that with a Kodak.
I could. But I can't take a picture of this game with a Kodak. People who are playing this were telling me they love it, and good on them for liking it. It's... Now, I said it was 8-bit. You're contending that it's 16-bit. I think it probably is somewhere in the middle, because I think it's...
I think it has, like, a 16-bit style.
I think, yeah, but it's... I don't think it's fully executed as a 16-bit title. Like, I think it's all done to look 16-bit, but it's not true.
Yeah. I mean, are you with me in that you're getting kind of sick of fucking pixel art? I know we use it on the site a bit, but, like...
I like pixel art, but... Here's my problem with the game.
People are using it as a cop-out, essentially, like, to save money on...
They're doing it as budget, and they're calling it art.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was cool at first. And there are some games where they do it, like, and it is... Wow. Like, I feel like... Sword and Sorcery is going to be a Game Club game one of these days, because when it's my turn to pick, I'm going to pick something fucking hipstery like that. but like that does it well. And actually, that Super Time Force, the new Capybara, they do it very cool this is what you remember.
I feel like it's what you remember
the Super Nintendo being like. There's like so much shit happening, but I mean, if you look back at it,
right? There's a lot going on in that Super Time Force game, like that wouldn't happen in an old school pixel art game, such as transparencies and particle effects and all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But so back to Penny Arcade 3. So I downloaded it for $5.
I'm gonna keep digressing. I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about Dreamcast.
How dare you?
Dreamcast,
cheating on us?
Right? Did you know that Dreamcast can do normal mapping, which is a process that the PS2 is not capable of? Like, if I felt, I feel like, fuck, man, if that system would have taken off a little bit more, if it would have came with a DVD drive, later they would have put out a dual analog controller, it would have, man, what could have been?
Welcome to our new segment, Dreamcast Memories.
And you know what's going to happen is, I mean, yeah, we bought into that game, Redux or whatever.
Right.
But all that's coming out for it is essentially 2D shmups.
Yeah.
Right?
It's a lot of shmups.
I bought into the game because it's cool, it's kitschy, but, like, I don't really like shmups.
I do like shmups.
I like Raiden.
I'm terrible at them.
I like Raiden.
I like Gradius back in the day. That was one of my favorite titles.
Xevious
was good.
Xevious
was
good. Raiden's my favorite.
Anyway, so
let me talk about.
Yeah, Penny Arcade. Penny Arcade 3 is a standard 8-bit or 16-bit RPG, Final Fantasy 1 through 3 styling, basically.
Okay.
But it doesn't really do anything different than any of those games. Like, it's almost like, you know, if you had like the RPG Maker game or whatever engine they use for that, you could pretty much make this game.
But Gabe and Tycho.
Right, so the real draw of the game is sort of the interplay between the characters and the dialogue.
And giving those guys more money.
And the joke, or the jokes that are contained within the game. I didn't find this game very funny. Now, granted, I'd only played for about an hour before I got absolutely sick of it. Mm-hmm. But it's standard RPG affair. If this game was on a dedicated handheld, it would make more sense to me.
It's available, right?
Or at least it will be available on Android and iOS. But on those systems, I almost feel like the way they did the game, the elements will be too small on the screen to control well.
I don't know. I played
it's
through...
It's a menu-driven battle system.
That can be done. I actually played through most of Final Fantasy 1 on my iPhone before...
Emulator?
No. Okay. They have a version out. They have the PSP version that came out.
But that was optimized for a handheld.
Yeah, I mean, there were some bad parts about it, but it was fine, and it was like $8. And,
sure.
But then, like, Final Fantasy 1 isn't actually very good.
No.
Those games don't get okay until about 3, and 3 is really, really fucking hard.
All 3 of the first ones were insanely hard, because, like, there's some items you just can't get.
Well, no, here's the thing is, like, tell me about the third one, because I bought the DS remake. Yo, I didn't realize those Phoenix Downs...
Yeah, you
can, those
you
are can, limited, dog.
You only get so many start overs.
Yo, you can get game over.
Yeah. So
are we still talking about Penny Arcade?
Yeah, you know, overall it's kind of boring. I know some people who are playing this who love it though, who love it. So
are these people that are like for Penny Arcade?
Maybe, but they're show listeners, so be polite.
I mean, listen, I go to PAX all the time, but. I'm not, you know...
I have no love for the guys running Penny Arcade, like...
I respect them, but they're... You and them have a lot in common.
I'm sure I do. Like, I don't dislike them, but at the same time, like, I'm not at all a fanboy. Like, they do plenty of things that piss me off.
Yeah, I feel like...
Whole fight between them and the control... Oh, that guy with the...
Yeah,
all,
that,
ocean
was,
marketing
that was immature,
or whatever it was.
Like...
It was all sophomoric bullshit.
The Rape Wolves thing, or Dick Wolves
thing. I didn't care about
thing.
The Dick Wolves
like,
thing.
I don't know,
but...
it was, like, kind of annoying. It's like, they get very into... Sticking their making quick decisions and then like vehemently
defending
fighting
them,
like, yeah.
But the one with the guy,
they're big
about the
trolls.
Controller. Yeah,
which
it was
I,
all
which
very
I find
trolly.
Hilarious it, to an extent.
But at the same time, I respect them for creating the expo.
Oh
and,
no,
and
I,
making it the best game convention there is right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, there's know? The other thing. The whole Jordan Jesse Go thing from forever ago is like kind of annoying. But
yeah, I mean. So anyway, if you really are jonesing for some Final Fantasy 2 or whatever, the Penny Arcade game might be...
Is it hard, though? Is it hard like those games?
I didn't get far enough to tell you if it was hard. I mean, honestly, like, it really felt like a standard Japanese RPG from the early or the late 80s.
God damn, this bourbon's strong.
I'm,
like, feeling it.
Yeah, it's good. And the other thing is, I don't know why they changed studio. I'm sure there's a reason for
it.
Oh,
no, they weren't... Hothead basically gave up. They're like, the model wasn't profitable or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, well, it just wasn't
and,
worth their
and
time.
And Hothead,
right?
Hothead had a lot of stuff in their hopper.
Okay, so, but it's weird. When 1 and 2 came out, they were Xbox arcade titles.
Yeah.
And this new one I noticed is actually released under the indie label or whatever that
Yeah, no,
is.
It's not an official. It's like,
right.
Yeah, it gets hidden in there. I mean, the 1 and 2 are on Steam, too.
Yeah.
The Hothead, like, the thing is, like, I think they put out, what was it, Deathspang? I don't know, they put out one of those, right. Some more Xbox Live games. They put out a Jaws iOS game that I played a bit of that was pretty fun. They promised something for Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy that was supposed to come out on Towel Day last year. Towel Day being Douglas Adams' birthday. Right. And fucking nothing. Like, fuck these guys. Give me my Hitchhiker's Guide, whatever it is. I'll buy it.
So the one thing I will
You've
say...
You've seen my collection, right?
Yes, I have. The one thing I will say that I actually really adamantly and vehemently don't like about this game on Steam, at least on the PC experience, is... Well, two things. One, looking at an 8-bit or 16-bit full-screen game on a HD monitor is really hard on the eyes.
What,
like, it gets really almost dizzying after a while. Two, no mouse support in the game. Like, it's all WASD.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
I mean, it feels like a mouse would have made at least the battles faster.
I don't know. You don't want to play with a controller?
Nah, I don't want to play the game anymore. I'm done with it. Like,
yeah.
One and done, then.
I'll loan you this fucker.
But I did have quite a few other titles that I did enjoy this week.
Ugh.
It was a big week for me, John.
Yeah,
you got to play in.
Oh man, you played all the demos.
No, no, no.
What is Dofus Battles?
Okay,
I don't know what this is.
So
is that my saying that right?
Yes, Dofus
is that
was,
short for something?
No. So Dofus is an MMO that me and a friend of the show Eddie used to play, and we played it religiously. We played from beta for maybe I think 4 years.
Jesus.
We were playing that MMO. That was our World of Warcraft, right? And it is a anime-styled, turn-based tactical combat MMO. And it's done by a French company called Ankama Games. And they actually put out some good stuff. That game was actually really solid. Me and Eddie sort of threw up our hands after the we stopped playing after the first packs. That was our landmark. Like, uh-huh. To say, like, all right, no more. We're losing our shit. Because we were both basically end game at that point and running out of things to do. And
oh, that first PAX.
Yeah.
I slept on the floor. I used Kyo's goddamn joystick as a pillow. That is that's not a euphemism.
The most comfortable pillow you'll find.
Yeah, no, like a fucking giant Street Fighter fucking joystick. Like,
yeah.
Jesus Christ.
So, Dofus proper...
He really lived like animals that first patch.
Like, are we going to talk about games today? Or are we going to talk about things that everyone doesn't know?
I thought you like it when I riff more.
I do, but I want to get through this.
Okay.
So, Dofus is an MMO. This is a game based on the universe of Dofus. Dofus, by the way, is a dragon egg in the game. Right? The whole game is about finding dragon eggs.
This is why I keep digressing.
So this is an iPad tower defense game.
Oh, okay.
All right. So
what's up?
So Dofus Battles 1,
yeah.
I bought for $1. I think it's $3 right now on the store. It's a tower defense game with the different character classes from the Dofus MMO in it, which you can level up and equip each of them, and they function as your towers. And it has tie-ins to the MMO as well. There's certain things that you can accomplish in the MMO which will unlock items in the game itself. Last October, when I was on my my anniversary, we went on a cruise, me and my wife. And on the downtime during the cruise, like when, you know, the weather was bad and we were stuck in the cabin, I actually wound up playing this game a lot. So they released an update, and I don't know when it was released or when they released the update, but I saw that they released an update recently for it, so I grabbed it. It seems to have added, like, another level or two to the proper game, and then they added Dofus Battles 2. Dofus Battles 2 is a tower attack game, in that instead of actually defending a thing, you're trying to break through it, so you're sending waves of monsters against it, which is fun, and I like it. So the fun thing about Dofus is that, for some reason, it always has really bad translations. Like, intentionally bad translations. Like,
nice.
It's part of the joke.
Yeah.
And...
I'm in.
Because it's coming from
it's kind of a tieback to what we were talking about, like, Final Fantasy IV.
Right. So
never mentioned 4 before.
No, we never mentioned 4.
4 had that fucking... 4 was 2, and then, you know, restore and, to...
The math and the connect the dots shit that you have
well,
to
no,
do.
Well, no, because 4 was 2, and then... But they, like, nerfed it hardcore for the U.S. audience and just had the most nonsensical goddamn translation.
Right. So, the first one... I mean, the storyline is irrelevant and negligible. You're really just going from battle to battle. And there's some cool sub-games. So, I'll talk about the first one. The first one is Tower Defense. It's a great formula. It's heavily strategic. It's a lot of fun to play. And a lot of the levels, like, there's not really one right way to beat them, like in a lot of Tower Defense games. You know how in a lot of Tower Defense games, you just have to optimize 100% to get through the level or you're not going to beat it?
Sure.
This one, like, there's a couple of strategies you can utilize on any given level that may work depending on what you're facing.
Have you played the Army of Darkness?
No, but it sounds amazing.
The Army of Darkness. It's on iOS. I hope it's on Android so you can get it. It's a great tower defense-ish kind of game. You got to see it. It's got many clips from the movie.
Cool.
So
my favorite thing about both of these games, by the way, is the badly translated story. Because the villain in the game is a character called Jeff Stobbs. Which is a Steve Jobs allegory.
We were making fun of Steve Jobs just this very week.
And he's a mad scientist character in this game. Like, everything's very, like, sort of steampunky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Lost me again.
All right, but, he's, like, the mad evil scientist, and he keeps... And everything
Does he have
is
hinges on his goggles?
Basically.
God damn
and
it.
Everything is highly... Everything in Dofus is always highly satirical, if you get it. So he has he's created a device called the Slablet instead of the iPad, the tablet.
Oh,
the Slablet.
Gotcha.
If you see it with the visuals in game,
it's funnier when you explain it.
Anyway, of the tower defense games I've played, and I've played a lot, this is definitely one of my favorites. And it's really cheap. It's like, I think the first one I got for 99 cents, it might be $3 right now.
It's $2 for the first one, $3 for the second one. I just downloaded the light versions to check them out.
Yeah.
So, you
know. They're definitely worth checking out.
I've been looking for something new on the iPad.
You may get lost a little bit if you never played the proper MMO, which is also, I think it's...
Yeah, dude, because I'm not, like, really familiar with any video game conventions or whatever.
There's an XBL title that ties into the universe as well, but I never played it. It's sort of not really within the same... universe, but it is whatever. But I really do like the game. I'm gonna get some more time behind it and let you know. I mean, I think this is gonna be my pinball arcade.
Oh, well, good for you, man. Why'd you have to say that?
You know,
because
cool?
Now I'm jonesing for the next fucking content update.
Do you know what's cool about this game, by the way, is that 1 and 2 tie together. That there's certain levels that you have to go from 1 to 2 and then back to 1 to actually... So, needed something to play on the subway.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do this out of order. Keeping in the tower defense motif we have right now, I downloaded this game. It's called Empire Defense 2, which is a tower defense game based in feudal Japan, or no, feudal China. And I think
China have the feudal, feudal lord system.
I'm not sure, but it's you know, maybe warlords on horses, right?
Yeah,
romancing the three kingdoms type of stuff.
Yeah, I took a Japanese history class, but I never took a Chinese history.
There's
class.
A lot of names that you see whenever you see sort of a historical Chinese game or documentary or whatever, but that none of that I remember because I'm not Chinese. And I don't pay that great attention. Like, there's a lot of history behind the culture. I just don't know. But it's sort of like a...
say.
Yeah. It's a very, like, anime-ish... Actually, the art style is very, I'm going to say, Torchlight-ish.
Nice.
And it's a tower defense game. Standard tower defense affair. The one thing that they do that I thought was cute was that... So you start on a level, and your thing you're defending is your general. That's, you know, your avatar. He's on a horse. As the level goes, he gains movement points, and you can actually move him and set the path that the enemies will chase him by, which I thought was kind of cool. I've never seen that in a tower defense game before. It's a pretty game.
What's this called again?
Empire Defense 2. The only problem I have with it is that so far, every time I've actually went to close the game, it's crashed my Android, and I've had to wait for the process to kick off. takes about 2 minutes.
Jesus Christ.
I did a reboot earlier. Hopefully that will alleviate my problem. And then
that's gross.
In keeping with wanting to get some more games to play in the subway, I downloaded Sonic CD on my Android.
You know, and I saw this and I see your notes on it and like, no, you're fucking so wrong. Like, you this game, no.
So, okay.
you should...
Honest opinion here, I never
played... This is the best fucking Sonic game.
I never played this game on Sega CD. I never played it. I know.
No, here's the thing, man. Virtual controls, right?
Yeah, but I don't have a problem with the virtual controls. I think they're pretty accurate.
Okay.
And it's one button. I mean, it's jump and D-pad.
Didn't Sonic CD have the spin attack?
Well, it's not a button in the game.
All right.
I do feel like this game, I don't know for sure, but I think the game was modified for Android.
Okay. I mean, I personally, and a lot of Sonic purists, like, consider this, not that I would consider myself, I'm not in that camp. But, like, consider this the best original Sonic game.
I always thought 2 was probably...
2 is incredible. I played the shit out of that. But
in retrospect, like, these games, like, were they ever really... I mean, because they put so much effort and so much care into the level design and hiding items and putting secret passages and all that throughout the levels. And 90% of the time, most people don't see that because the goal is to run through the fucking level as fast as you can.
Yeah, but, I mean, like, you remember how games were back then? Like... Games were, honestly, if you got really fucking good at them, games that weren't RPGs were an hour and a half.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure.
Like, you go back and you do shit, like, fucking, hey, man, I remember a friend of mine and I, like, playing Sonic 2 until we, you know, got fucking Super Sonic, like, just shit, it's bananas.
And all the Chaos Emeralds and all that.
Yeah, you know, like, those games were easy to learn, hard to master.
They put a lot of Easter eggs in them.
Yeah.
But I don't know if this is how the first game was, but the way the... And I don't even have the full game. I just downloaded the demo because I was really apprehensive about a virtual D-pad game going into it. Although the virtual D-pad, as it turns out, not so bad.
I really think, like, you are right to an extent, is, like, you can't... And I think we learned this with, like, Beyond Good and Evil, is, like, sometimes you can't go back if you didn't have that original experience.
Right. And one of the things with this game is, you know, the way it works is that you get 2 levels and then a boss battle. In order to unlock the boss battle, you have to beat the first 2 levels within a certain time.
Yeah, and there's the whole time change mechanic. Like,
yeah,
back
which
and
I
forth.
Didn't. I don't actually grasp it that well, like, because it just seems to happen at random intervals for me.
I don't know. Like, you should play...
Let me go get my Sega CD, and we'll...
Well, they...
It Game was, Club!
Yeah. That's not a bad idea. I love Sonic CD. And do you know if that has a Japanese soundtrack or the US soundtrack? Because they're both awesome, just different.
I mean, I actually felt the soundtrack was awesome, but I really don't know. It sounds like... You know, a lot of this music sounds like it was, like, funky, fresh, cool. Like, it almost sounds like it should have been in Toe Jam and Earl.
Oh, that I think that might be the Japanese one, because, like, the U.S. one was, like, sort of...
There's a lot of,
16-bit,
like,
metal.
There's a lot of, like, synth vocal things going on that aren't really vocals.
Mm-hmm.
I'll show you later.
The SBLA version has both soundtracks on it.
It may even have that. I haven't really played around with the options.
Okay.
So, John, I would like to know, you played Spec Ops The Line. And you've
I
been,
did!
You've look, been talking to me about this for a week now.
Look... One of us played a new game.
I know.
This is incredible.
Wait. Penny Arcade 3 is new.
Ugh, doesn't count.
New old.
Okay, so Spec Ops The Line has been in development for like 4 fucking years, right? For those who don't remember, Spec Ops was a line of like budget military shooters on the PS1 that they... I mean, they, I don't know why they felt they needed to bring the brand back, but they did. It's a third-person shooter, a third-person cover-based shooter, modern military stuff. The premise is that Dubai, the city in the United Arab Emirates, was, like, engulfed by this huge sandstorm, right? To the point where, like, you know, everybody had to evacuate. The city is in ruin, right? And there's a certain amount of people didn't get out. A U.S. Army unit was sent in to pull out their survivors and nothing was heard from them for 6 months. The storm is apparently, like, keeping the area blocked out, right? So, that's the premise for that's the information you have when you go into it, right?
It seems a little bit fanciful for a military. Like, it's this magic storm that's keeping people out.
I don't know. I guess fanciful, it kind of reminded me, like, I mean, the setup, whatever, it reminds me of the day after tomorrow. Like the mega storm or whatever.
Right.
That's not that important.
The wolves.
So this book is... I mean, this book. This
Jake
movie is...
Gyllenhaal.
This movie's this movie, this book, this video game is based on Heart of Darkness, the Conrad novel. I think the only way they could accomplish it in a completely modern setting, because, you know, the most well-known version of this is Apocalypse Now. Is to have this sort of you get cut off from civilization,
sure,
and this whole thing happens.
Now this is obviously a modern game because Dubai wasn't really even
no
a
no
thing
this is
until...
this is like 2014. This happens in 2014. So you have all current technology. So very interesting game, a slow burn to say the least. But you are playing as Nolan North. I mean, you're playing as...
So I'm Deadpool, Wolverine, and Shepard.
Well, he's not Shepard.
Oh, no.
But you're playing as a Delta Force captain. You have a lieutenant with you who's a subordinate, and then a sergeant with you, you know, also obviously a subordinate. The voice acting in this thing is fucking incredible. But you get in there, and things just go to shit. You end up fighting other U.S. military personnel, which is really interesting, like, playing through this for me, like, while, you know, I've been in the Army for 12 years now,
right.
And it's like, I have never played a game where I was really killing guys where they wear the same fucking uniform as me, with the exception of, like...
Does it make sense why you're doing
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Modern Warfare 2, like, sort of, but, you know, everything's done so Michael Bay-ish in those games that it doesn't really count. This game really flips the war game genre on its head because it makes war not fun.
Well, I mean, so it's an actual war game, right?
Yeah.
Like,
well, here's the part of the shame in calling games is because it implies that fun is a part of it. And, you know, I think sometimes, and I think we'll get to this when we talk about our game club game, is maybe it's more important that a game is effective than fun. It's like a movie, you know? Like, I didn't have fun watching Schindler's List, but it's a great film, right?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's effective. So some important things about it, like, it is a slow burn.
Did you play through the whole game already?
Absolutely. Or? I played through it in two sittings.
So how long of a title is it?
7 hours.
Okay.
I played through in two sittings, and I mean, there like the big thing that really sets it off, like, oh shit, this is not like your average war game, happens well into it. The big fucking hook, and like, so I was playing this. I played this on my computer on the big screen in my living room, and Katie was like, "Wait, did that just happen?" And I'm like, I honestly, like, it took me like 5 or 6 minutes. I was keep doing it. I'm like, yeah, I don't think a game has ever done that. Like, this thing that it does several hours in. Like, the thing that
it
does.
Is that thing a plot point for everyone? Is it like a linear story?
Yeah, that, okay. No. It has to happen. It has to happen for it to progress. And there are several moral choices you can make throughout the game. And I listened to a whole interview with one of the writers, and it was super interesting. But, like, this game flips the war genre on its head, and it does some things that are very impactful. I, like, really think this game is worth playing. I don't know. But besides that, mechanically, third-person shooter... It's a very competent third-person shooter. Things it does incredibly well, storytelling. I don't want to go into it too much because it will ruin it for you. The thing is, there are no incredible story hooks early on. This is a slow burn that pays off at the end. I think that they did that is very interesting. When you are in a battle, like when you are in a firefight, your squad members are actively calling out the locations of enemies. And I've never seen this done quite as well as they did it here. The voice acting is incredible, by the way. One of your squad mates is Christopher Kid Reed from Kid and Play. And he does a great job. He's fucking great. They are calling out enemy location. Like, they are acting like real fucking soldiers. Like, you know, like, fucking, you know, I got Tango, 6 o'clock, 50 meters, like, you know.
And they're using the terminology and all that, like, it's true to life.
They're very, a lot of this stuff, their consultant was very good. There's some stuff that takes you out of it, which really sucks. Like, they will go on a zip line with their bare fucking hands, which, like, just like, oh shit, yeah, I'm playing a video game.
Yeah.
There is some stuff that parallels this week's Game Club game, Amnesia, which is very, very interesting.
Well, we do spoilers with Amnesia, so
I mean,
I think we can talk about it more in depth there.
Yeah, we'll get to it there, but there are things that happen with the perception of what's going on. Like, I mean, that I don't think that's huge. There's also another thing that's important is, like, I put it on the show notes as progression/regression through the narrative. Things get fucking real. Like, as your character goes on, like, things just become way more visceral. You start out very tight. Your soldiers are very respectful to you. They're like, sir, sir, sir. As it goes on, it's like, what the fuck are you doing, man? And it's like, you know, coming from, you know, the rank structure in the military is like, if somebody's saying that to you, shit is fucked up. Like, shit is double knotted.
And these are not like grunt guys. These are like the special
ops. This is fucking
ops.
Delta Force.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are like, I mean, these, you know, I feel like, you know, I come from a special perspective on this game, spending the time in the military. These guys are like fucking 15 levels above what
these,
I do.
These are the elites. Yeah. These are like, yeah.
Like, these are guys that don't fuck around, you know, and just like everything becomes more fucking drastic as the shit goes. Like, the way they talk on the battlefield gets more ridiculous. The way the enemy's chatter is, like, holy shit, is this guy actually doing this? The way execution works. It, like, you know, if you have a down, a lot of times you will down enemies on the battlefield and they'll be rolling around moaning, like, oh, and they can't get up and fight you, but you have the option to execute them. Like, and I did it a few times because I felt like, oh man, like, I'm like ending these guys' suffering. But the way it changes from the beginning of the game, where it's almost clinical and it's like a shot to the head, and to later in the game becoming almost cruel, I don't know. It's very, very interesting.
It sounds like the game has like a real like morality to it. Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of decisions where you have to actually stop and think instead of just like, oh, well, this is worth 10 points. Pa-cow.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, the narrative is essentially still linear. It's still very linear. But this game is going to end up being very important, I think. I don't think...
How recent is this? 2011?
No, this came out 2 weeks ago.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah,
so this game is... And runs great on my fucking computer. it looked gorgeous on my screen. I hear the multiplayer looks like shit. Now, I would never play the multiplayer because that's not what I came to this game for.
Right. And I don't think the multiplayer can... I think it's there by virtue of it being a first-person shooter and having to have it.
Yeah.
Now, did you get this during the sale, or was this a...
I got this when it was on sale on Amazon for $25. It's on... Like, if you get it on Steam during the sale, it's still going to be $40. If they pop it back down on Steam, it's going to be $30. It's well worth it at $30. And I think most systems can handle it. I think this is going to be an important game to play. I think the battlefield awareness, like, sort of mechanism they use, that mechanic is going to be important going forward in shooters. Like, I think that will get ripped out of there. But the way they tell a war story is definitely important. And while this game has some shortcomings, some plot holes, and some, like, reality, like, checks, like, I don't know so much about that. the things that make this game great sort of overshadow that. And I think this makes my list for the end of the year at
this
point.
That's a lofty place to be.
I'm just saying, I think this is an important game to play.
Is this a game with maybe the plot holes? When I hear plot hole now, my first thought always goes to, well, are they saving that for the DLC?
There's no opportunity for...
Okay.
I think there is an option on the main menu for DLC, but I think it's for
costumes,
multiplayer.
Maybe maps?
Unless it's from a... Like, if they did something from a different character's perspective, that could work.
Like the quote-unquote enemy mission
like Blue Shift or something. Yeah. Like, I think they could pull that off. But as it stands, like, the narrative is good.
Okay.
And, you know, I, like, this is, you should play this. Maybe not at $60, because I have trouble, like... You know,
$60 for 7 hours does not seem like a great value proposition.
I hate that trade-off.
Especially when I have other things in the queue. You know?
I feel like this game deserves to be played, though.
I mean, this game, like, to me, that's the... I'm going to start calling it the Asura's Wrath debacle. Like, it's a game
that
I
game
really want to...
fucking dropped in price either.
It's a game I really want to play at $20.
I think I would do Asura's at 30. I picked this up at 25. I think if this game is anywhere near $30, fucking buy this game.
Do you think it's better with
if you are into renting games, rent this fucking game.
Mouse and keyboard versus controller.
I played controller the whole time.
Okay.
And the controller support is very it's good. The other thing is there are some small touches that are that show the attention to detail, like when you're in the sort of idle screen for the top menu, when you hit start game, you go at the very beginning, you go straight into it. Like, it just like holy shit, I'm in this fucking helicopter. Shit is going bananas.
No credits, nothing. Just boom, you're
boom,
in.
You're
Tarantino
in there.
Little
late title on it. And the initial menu changes depending throughout the game, because I only backed out of the game four times, but each time the scene was different, the menu was different to reflect where I was in the story. Anyway, I've gone on about this enough, but I really recommend that you guys play this, because I think it'll elicit a response. Solicit a response, regardless of how, like... This game's fucking art, you know?
You've painted enough of a cheery picture for this game that I actually do want to play it now.
I think...
And I'm not really an FPS guy.
No, this is third person. This is Gears of War mechanics.
Oh, okay. Then I probably...
This was really, fuck. Like, I mean, for me, personally, like, I mean, killing guys that wear the same fucking work outfit as me is kind of interesting.
They were all dressed like advertising people?
Yeah.
Everyone's wearing a flannel and cut-off shorts.
Yeah, my other job.
All right, John. Let's move to something a little bit more lighthearted and not at all depressing.
Oh, God, fuck you. Well, I mean, the ending is good.
John, you watched The Iron Giant.
Okay, so...
which I gotta say, before you say anything, I think hands down the best Vin Diesel movie.
Fuck off. Have you not seen... First of all, even people that say that, like, try to be ironic assholes...
I'm not. It's an awesome movie.
Saving Private Ryan. He's in that.
Is he really?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
That was, like, sort of his launching pad. The thing is, Kate, we were at your party on Saturday, and I was like... Something came up, and I was like, Katie, have you ever seen The Iron Giant? And she was like, no. Because we've been on this big animation kick, because a lot of the movies that are available in 3D are all animated movies. It's either animated or action movies, right? So we watched Tangled and How to Train Your Dragon in 3D. This movie's obviously not available in 3D. It was like 1999. But I fucking love this movie. Not available on Blu-ray.
No one who has seen this movie doesn't love this movie. Like, there's nothing that you could...
Yeah.
Like, it's one of the most perfect movies.
Yeah. It's not available on Blu-ray, which is really upsetting. Because I would have preferred her first experience being that. It is on Netflix, so it is available in HD. But the soundtrack mix that at least that was coming through the Xbox was stereo only and not 5.1, which it just kind of like was a little annoying because the voices weren't coming through the center channel; they were coming through the left and right. It's that movie fucking stands the test of time though.
It's up there with most of the Disney films that you watch, right? Like,
I would safely say that this is my favorite animated movie. So, maybe next to Heavy Metal. I love Heavy Metal, but this is really good.
I mean, I don't want to say I have a favorite because I like so many of them, but this is like such a good one.
And the reason this whole thing came to mind was like Dan from Perpetual Geek was saying that he had never seen it. Which is really funny because this guy's like super into nerdy animated shit, but like,
and Vin Diesel.
Yeah, I don't think he's as into Vin Diesel.
Well, I mean, not into Vin Diesel?
And of course, and then of course Sunday, like we were flipping around the channels, and Pitch Black was on AMC, and I was like, Katie, have you ever seen this? She's like, no. So I was like, we have to turn this off. You can't.
For a married couple, there's a lot of things you don't know about each other.
Most of them are Vin Diesel related. I mean, yeah. She doesn't know what me and Vin Diesel do. So,
not like our listenership.
Yeah. But anyway,
picture that in your head, people.
Picture that with a Kodak. But yeah, anyway, I'm also going. I'm going to go back and revisit all the Riddick stuff because the third live action movie is coming. They finished. They finished shooting on that. That's an indie movie, by the way.
Is it really?
Vin Diesel and the writer-director, David Twoley, I believe his name is, secured all the funding themselves. I think Vin Diesel's in it for like 10 mil or something like that.
I'm totally okay with that because, to be honest, like Riddick failed where Pitch Black succeeded. And part of the reason was Pitch Black, I mean, it wasn't a budget movie, but it didn't have nearly the budget that Riddick did. And as a result, they kept a lot of practical stuff, and it was more story-driven than effects-driven. And Riddick was all about, what scene can we put in the trailer?
Yeah, I agree to an extent. I still like Riddick. I'm a lot
well,
of
you're
people
alone
don't.
In that, then.
I don't know. I find the character very intriguing. That first movie is, it is a great spiritual successor to the initial Alien movie.
Pitch Black is, I think, on the same, or at least the same plane as Alien.
Yeah,
for sure.
I would agree.
But I would, like Riddick is not nearly what Aliens was.
No, but it's better than any of the other Alien movies.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Anyway, so, wow, that was really something.
Yeah, no, that was. You know, I didn't put this on my list, but do you know what I found out from my wife recently? She had never seen E.T.
Ew.
Which we wound up watching.
Ugh.
That movie is fucking depressing.
Yeah, it is.
Like that, I
Yo,
don't know.
E.T. dies, man.
How is that a children's movie?
Dude, children in 1984 were way more resilient.
Every child who I've seen watch that movie in recent times has just not been able to get through it. It's too sad.
Yeah, Kiss the Air Force.
Anyway, John, this was a good one. We're going to be right back with Hype Bonanza.
I've taken a hair or two. I've given quite a few. I swing my fists and the cities all fall. I've broken a law or two. Reckon I only missed a few. I watch these long days pass through the bars. I curse the brass. I had a crack rib or two, I guess I busted more. I laid a couple out on the curling board. Sometimes you walk the line, sometimes it walks you. You get quick to anger, quick to put a knife up to another man's throat. I cannot steal the hell that's in these news. They came to take me in and try to fight, just let them win. Oh, oh, oh. A man died in my cell. Damn, the car sure gave me hell.
Hype Bonanza!
Yay! I hate this name.
No, it's great. It's where we talk about stuff we're excited about.
We do actually have a good list today. It's not robust like last time.
I think... So, we talked about it last week, but then it happened. Finally got a girlfriend. Steam sale is on like Donkey Kong.
And it is fucking ruining us, Sean.
I think this is probably the first one you've gotten really into, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I Steam was a non-issue to me before actually meeting you. I used to not like Steam because when Steam first came out,
they were fucked when they first
came out. It
was
a train wreck. Yeah. It was like installing AIDS onto your computer.
Yeah.
So I avoided it until recently when everyone was like, oh, it's great. What are you talking about?
And the sales. I have not spent... I've spent maybe 20, 25 bucks so far.
I think I'm at around the same amount.
But I have so many more games. There's still stuff on my watch list that's on sale, and I'm going to pick up... I mean, they're like 20 bucks a piece if they... for their normal sale price, but if they're like featured as a daily thing, because I really want Driver San Francisco and I want Lego Batman 2, because I'm hearing great things about Lego Batman 2,
which is basically Lego Justice League.
Yeah. I know. I've heard it's fantastic, but so far, .com. We've picked up a lot of games that are probably future Game Club contenders.
Yeah.
We've got Dear Esther, which.
Something's been on my radar for a while,
yeah,
actually.
You know what's really interesting? Our Game Club game, Amnesia, they're collaborating with the guys that did Dear Esther for Amnesia, A Machine for Pigs, the sequel.
God, that name.
Just that name makes me scared, but I'm a big pussy.
That's true.
We picked up Metro 2033, which I'm looking forward to. I've wanted to play for a long time.
Yeah, and I picked up one of the indie bundles for one game, but it was totally worth it just for that one game.
I probably already had most of those games, and that's why I haven't bought any of the indie bundles yet.
Some of the indie bundles are actually great.
I picked up, really great. I've already had most of the stuff. I played... Stacking was $3.50.
Yeah, I had it already, but Bastion was up there for like... $2.95.
Yeah, that game. I mean, we could do that at Game Club at some point in the future because I loved that game.
I mean, we could also list the titles that are ridiculously cheap right now.
Also, Indie Game the Movie is $5 on Steam and on their site.
I would buy it from the site because then they get 100%.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah, so we're probably going to talk about that next week because I've seen that. And
dude, Limbo is 75% off.
Limbo is $2.49 right now.
Jesus Christ.
You are insane. Like, I mean, honestly, it's probably not going to be that price on Thursday when people hear this, but fuck.
What's an indie bundle? Fucking $6? Jesus Christ.
DEF CON, Space Chem, Ticket to Ride, and Trauma. I already have and DEF CON.
All of them.
Anyway, what surprises me is nobody has countered this.
Yeah, no, I saw your notes.
Last summer, Direct to Drive, which is now owned by Gamefly, they countered and at least had some sort of summer sale. Right now, Gamefly, Impulse, which is now GameStop, and Origin, no. There's nothing.
Right. Origin is just EA, though, right?
But Steam.
You know what's weird is that Steam has so many EA games on it. Like,
well, the older ones, they don't have any more. Like, I mean...
Right. Also, Desura didn't do anything, I noticed.
I
mean, they're sort of a different
also
beast, but...
you know, I haven't seen anything big from Xbox either. One thing worth
noting...
Well,
Xbox has Summer of Arcade, which is probably happening,
yeah.
I think, this Wednesday. Or
next,
next
week, it's with Tony Hawk, but... I was talking to Kevin from Perpetual Geek Machine. I texted
Shameless plug.
Well, I texted him because like I was like, man, like every time I go on here and they're like, your friends have bought, I always see him. and then so I clicked on his profile. Fucking guy has 650 or something Steam games.
I wonder how many of them he's actually played.
He's worse than me, I would guess. So I texted him, like, let me guess, your Steam games, when you buy them, do not come out of your joint account with your wife. And he's like, nope.
to be married.
Yeah.
So yeah, anyway, if you haven't looked at this yet, go on to fucking Steam and take a look at the sale. It's absolutely ridiculous. At any given time, there's at least one title up there worth buying for whatever crazy price they've marked it down to. There's a lot of, like, 75% off games.
Yeah, and, you know, I've seen some reaction online, and a lot of people are like, meh. And I'm like, fuck off, because the internet hates everything.
That's true. The internet also thinks this sale is racist.
Really?
I don't know.
Anyway. So, tell me, you know, I saw this, and I will buy it if it becomes a real thing, but the LEGO Portal set?
Yeah, so the LEGO has a site called Cuso, or C-U-U-S-O-O. I don't know how to pronounce that.
It's Cuso.
Cuso.
I don't know.
It is a place where people can...
That looks like a guy that fucking hangs on LEGO sites.
I don't know.
I do.
So it's a site where you can users can submit their concepts for LEGO sets, and then if they get voted on by the community, they have to get, I think it's 10,000 votes. LEGO puts them into review and sees if they're possible, and if they're possible, they will make a set out of them. The Portal set just got 10,000 approvals.
Yeah, I doubt that was hard.
And the concept art is absolutely, oh, not even art. Someone made the Portal sets out of existing LEGOs.
No, I've seen this, and this shit looks bananas.
Absolutely amazing.
Like, yeah.
And Portal lends itself so great to LEGO because it's a lot of interlocking pieces, clean white, like sort of like flat surfaces, all that. You know, it's
tie back to our previous discussion. Do you have Portal 2 on PC?
No, I have it on Xbox.
You should probably get it on PC if it pops back down to like $6 like it was, so we can do some of that co-op stuff. Because I haven't completely made it through co-op yet.
Okay.
I think it'd be a lot of fun.
But yeah, it's absolutely one of the best looking LEGO sets I've ever seen. Like, I'm not going to run out and buy it because, like, I don't have space for any more LEGOs. Do you know what I mean?
Like, well, I'm in luck because I have a whole extra room where I could put shit like LEGOs, and considering I don't have any LEGOs... yeah, I could do that.
I mean, the thing I might buy, if this actually really comes to fruition, is the minifigs, because I love the minifigs. And they have a Chell minifig, and then they have the gun turrets, which look awesome.
Oh, only if they talk, man.
I'm kind of hoping they make a Gladios, but it's by far one of the best LEGO sets or at least concepts I've ever seen. So, John, we have a contest. By the time you hear this, you will be able to see our contest live on our Facebook page. We have a picture of a person that we're calling the King of Video Games. You may know him. His name is John Anderson.
Uh-huh.
And we are asking our listeners to write a caption.
So, yeah, it's like a meme picture.
It's a meme picture.
So you just, you know, first line, second line. I hope people participate in this because otherwise it's going to be mega depressing.
I'll participate.
We can't give ourselves these prizes. The winner is going to get a bunch of Steam games.
Yeah, including the first Torchlight.
We'll give you first Torchlight.
In anticipation of Torchlight 2.
And we'll give you a couple other games that I buy on Steam between now and next Tuesday. We're saying it closes next Tuesday.
Yeah, I think Tuesday is a fair time.
Okay.
We'd really like to get some and you know, we're not going to say I'm not going to censor people.
Absolutely.
But, you know, keep it funny at least.
Yeah, honestly, if you use the F word, you know, the other one, I'm going to be kind of annoyed.
If it's used really well, I won't be.
Whatever. So anyway,
we're going to be right back with our topic of discussion today.
Discussion!
Yay!
Ooh-yah! Day after day, your life wreck. The powers that be just bring down your neck. You get no respect. You get no relief. You gotta speak up and yell out your grief. So back up the rules. Back up the job. Cause I'm sick of not living to stay alive. Leave me alone. I feel alive. I don't want to be controlled. So I want. start?
I will start. John, what the fuck is the Ouya?
The Ouya is a video game thingy. No, it's a video game console that's currently the biggest fucking Kickstarter project of all time.
So before recording this today, it hit 5 million.
Yeah, the thing is, both you and I have funded this. Like probably when we started doing last week's episode, it's going to be $99 for retail. It's Android power. It's going to output at 1080p. It says HD, so maybe 720. So it's going
to have to imagine 1080. My cell phone is 1080.
We'll see. It's going to have HDMI out. They are touting the hackability, the rootability of it, which is something we'll talk about.
It is sort of a crowdsourced, open source video game console.
Yeah. That's
sort
of saying launch is March 2013. So I think we should just dive right the fuck in, man.
So here's the details on the console in full and glorious color, right? It's Android powered, so everything that gets developed for it is using the Android operating system and the Android programming language. I don't know it, but whatever that is. So here's some interesting things about the console. Every console is also a developer kit.
Okay.
Right? So, like, when you're developing for iOS or Xbox or whatever have you, right? If you want to develop a proper game, you need to get an SDK, which stands for Standard Developer Kit. In order to do that, you usually have to pay a ton of money.
Or iOS, it's like $100.
It's like $100, but I think Xbox is like $10,000.
No, XNA license for indie games is like down there too, like $100.
But that's indie. 200. That's not proper arcade.
But it could be. It's an XNA license.
Okay. Anyway, so every console is a developer kit, which is unique to the console. It is the fastest rising Kickstarter ever, although it seems to have evened off.
Yeah, no, they always do, but...
The first 2 days, it went to, like, 4 million, and now we're on, like, day five, and it's, like, 5 million.
Yeah.
But I do suspect that when it closes, it will probably be the most funded Kickstarter ever.
It already is. Yeah. The thing is, I'm... Honestly, like, I think it's very cool because of what I think I'm going to use it for, but I think I'm a lot more... I don't think I'm as high on this thing as you are.
No, I'm actually really enthusiastic for this, and that's a rarity for me because I'm not an enthusiastic person. Not like a positive enthusiastic person. This is a positive for me. I'm very excited.
But why?
So there's a couple of things about the Ouya that really interest me. One is the fact that pretty much anyone can be a developer for this thing. That's never really been tried on the scale before.
I disagree. Because of the existence of, oh, fuck, what's that thing called? Computers. because of computers, because of iOS, because of existing Android, because of Xbox Live indie games.
I don't know. Their purpose
because of everybody
not to
except
be open
for Sony and Nintendo. Yeah, Nintendo, actually, even WiiWare is fairly open, except they have somewhat abusive payment policies.
Right. But none of those were designed as consoles first and not as developer platforms.
Yeah.
And this is being almost ground up as a developer platform. So ultimately, its success or failure in that regard is going to be based on the ingenuity of the developing community.
Yeah. Here's the thing that kind of worries me, though, is, okay, you know, say they raise $7 million and say they sell through their entire initial run of consoles, which is 85 to 100,000, and then let's say, fucking by the grace of gods, they are able to produce another 50,000 for sale at launch. That is still the tiniest install base in console history.
Well, I mean, how many people does the Vita have right now?
Yeah, it's not doing so hot either.
Right.
It's still about a million.
Yeah, so, I mean...
And that had the name of Sony behind it.
Well, I don't know if that's good or bad anymore.
Well, at the time.
I think that could be argued.
But the thing is, I'm worried about install base.
So, the benefit of the Ouya, like, you know, so One of the things is that this is, since it's Android powered and it has its own marketplace, a lot of these games a developer can develop for the Ouya without, and also the cell phone and also whatever other device. So there's an efficiency to be had there. So Rovion or whatever can make an Angry Birds for.
Oh no, I'm sure Angry Birds will be on.
Oh,
this
I'm
fucking
absolutely
thing.
Positive, right? At minimal cost and hope it works. Right,
they could do anything at any cost because that company is worth fucking bajillions.
Yeah,
but I see that. Just I don't know. I feel like for these tinier companies, like they're gonna look at it and be like, ah, well, is it worth doing a decent port over to make the to allow for
controller support?
Yeah. Maybe if this thing fucking maybe if they were like maybe if they got in and were like. Oh, PlayStation Suite. This is a PlayStation Suite compatible device.
Perhaps.
But I doubt Sony would give them the license because it's main intent, I mean, because it's getting hooked up to a fucking television.
That's true.
You know?
So I feel like this console, to me, is not a competitor with the PlayStation or the Xbox. What it is a competitor with is Google TV and Apple TV.
And Boxy.
Yeah.
You know,
any on live, I guess, maybe.
I guess I feel like this thing to fucking to get off the ground is probably going to need to have on live support.
It and who knows?
I'm guessing this will have either what do you call it? Probably not Gaikai or whatever it is. Probably not them because they're owned by Sony now. But like, there's going to be some sort of streaming game support because it's only got 8 gigs of local storage.
Yeah, although that is the Kickstarter spec. If you follow the Kickstarter sort of like the thread of conversation that they're having around it, since they so far exceeded their Kickstarter goal, they're actually asking the community, like, because their original goal was under a million.
Yeah, I don't know how genuine that is.
I don't either. Let's put it this way. I feel like the Ouya was already going to come out one way or another, and they use Kickstarter as a marketing tool.
The thing is, I feel like there is a level of transparency that is missing with these guys. Because I feel wholeheartedly, and I hate saying I feel instead of I think that they would not have gotten to this Kickstarter level, and this they would not say this thing is 9 months away. If they did not have funding beforehand, like a serious level
of
funding.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
But the thing is, they came out today and said that this is entirely a crowdsourced thing, which I think has to be a fucking lie. Because they have to get a fucking slot from Foxconn or something somewhere in China. They have to get a slot in production.
There has to be a very large manufacturing chain that's
absolutely
going to, yeah, and just like production
I just
lines.
Feel like they are not being genuine. They're also misrepresenting a lot of things. Like they're saying everything's going to be free to play. Well, kind of. Everything's at least going to have a demo. Well, like, oh, so basically like Xbox Live. Yeah, so you're not like not fucking training a new goddamn crown there. And then the way that they sort of misused cautiously optimistic developer quotes on their on the page, like, sort of irked me because they got like somebody from what's the company that does Minecraft? Mojang or whatever. Like, I can't fucking pronounce it. But like the guy, they got like somebody that's not Notch to say, yeah, this is kind of cool. But they haven't got. There's no.
Well, Notch actually came out, I think it was a Kotaku article.
I saw him
article.
On the, I saw, it was Joystick.
Yeah, yeah.
But they, yeah, he was like, oh, yeah, this is a great idea. Let's see what happens. Almost 100% of the coverage I've seen so far has been, like, cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, and I think everyone wants to be optimistic about this because it's such a great idea if it works.
Except for me, essentially, I'm being a pessimist for the first time.
I know, it's rare.
I'm telling you what I'm excited about this box is, you know, an easy-ass way to load up a bunch of emulators and hook them to my current TV.
I also think it's a nice tool aside from, like, I mean, I already have an Xbox, but it does seem like it's going to be probably a good video streaming tool to watch Netflix or YouTube or whatever have
you. Yeah, Boxy.
So, if this thing works, I think it changes the landscape of video games at least a little bit.
I'm glad you scaled that back and said a little bit. Yeah, but continue.
If it doesn't work, there's definitely some ramifications, right? We've never really had a Kickstarter fail yet.
There have been.
Some of them
I sent you that one.
Yeah, that was the crazy one.
That was like $7,000.
Yeah.
And there have been a few others, like some people have like chipped in, I mean, for non-game products, like
right.
shoes. They got somebody got stiff for shoes.
But like, not on this level.
The thing is, yeah, never on this level. If this fucking fails, like this is gonna be a fucking
There better be a
damn
well good reason. But here's the thing, I don't think it's gonna fail. Because I think that the Kickstarter is a very strategic marketing tool. It's not a genuine, like, we need this
which
money to make
again,
it happen.
Which, again, goes back to, like, how they have to be lying. Like, because if they say that they're only relying on this $5 million, or if it ends up being $6 or $7 million, they're fucked. If it's only $7
million? Yeah, no, it's not.
They're fucked.
If you watch the promotional video they made for this thing, they literally have a team of people in that video working on
it. And they
this
have
thing.
Some they have some heavy hitters. The thing is, like, they definitely have other funding.
I think they
and
definitely
I wish they would be
funding.
A little bit more transparent, especially because what they're trying to sell this thing is this big open thing. Another right. thing I'm really worried about is they're like, this thing is so you could fucking root this motherfucker like
oh yeah okay.
The thing is, like, dude, how is that an incentive for a developer if you're like, I am worried for their sake. Like, yeah, you've got this app store, that's great, but you're touting how fucking hackable this thing is,
like, right? So I mean, it's not that much different than a PC in that regards, though, because they're saying basically you can rip apart the hardware, you can rip apart the software, you can modify it however you need to. Which I can do on my PC right now.
Yeah, but the thing, like, I mean, that's the thing, is like, we rely on Steam for convenience, right?
Right.
Like, yeah, if I wanted to go pirate video games, I totally could. Steam is very convenient. The thing is, the easier that pirating gets, the more people will do it. Like, I mean,
right. I think
people don't buy fucking music anymore.
Like, the benefit of what they're trying to do is, so they have a... Every user gets an ID, and I think there's sort of like, it's similar to an Xbox Live ID in that you get, you know, chivos and you get a name and you can communicate with people. So there is an added value to having a genuine copy, right? Like, if you pirate a copy of a game, like, you probably can't play multiplayer games with other people unless they also have a pirated copy. So it does sort of gear the games that will be developed for this platform in a certain way.
Yeah, I don't know. I worry about that personally.
So some other things that it means if it fails. Like, one of the things we actually mentioned is, like, you know, it's not uncommon for a game system to fail out the gate. You know, look at
it is uncommon in the modern era because considering how much
money and time goes into it. But then again, the Vita.
Yeah. Which, right. Jesus Christ.
And even looking back, you know, the Virtual Boy, the Jaguar, all these systems, like...
This fucking thing is a 3DO.
Right. Well, let's hope
this
not.
This is... Because it seems like almost an open standard. Like, they're not doing any... I don't know. And also, the fucking interface... The interface looks okay. Like, I mean...
It looks like Windows 8.
Wow! I hope they're fucking giving Microsoft at least a cut, because they are basing this shit on Metro.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not uncommon for a system to fail. You know, it if it does fail, it probably strengthens Sony, Microsoft, and Nintendo in the market. I don't know if that's true, because it may get people involved in the market who wouldn't normally be, and then they might look for another option.
I don't know. I feel like at this point, this is entirely an enthusiast device, and I want to bring up something that that Will Gallego said. He said, get Steam on it, and I'm sold. Unified hardware device for Steam, that's a win.
And a lot of the talking heads around this issue have said that this is basically the Steam box.
If they get Valve on board, is Valve going to come around for 100,000 install base? The thing is...
If Valve came around, they would have more than 100,000 install base, for sure.
The thing is, like... like, your conversion rate on a free game on iOS or Android is, like, something like 5%.
Right.
So...
And, you know,
the sell-through rate, like, with a console launch, like, let's say we're talking about, like, the N64 launch, which has got, like, Pilot Wings, Mario 64, and, like, NHL or something.
Right.
The fucking attach rate is at least 1.0. Like, I mean, like, they're selling at least one game per system. They have to.
This is true.
The thing is, that fucking attach rate drops down to, like, 0.10 or 0.05 when there are fucking demos or ad-supported free games. Like, where are these guys getting their cut?
Yeah, and there's also no talk of advertising. Like, you know, it's not like there's no standard for it. So if a developer wants to throw advertising in their game, it doesn't necessarily seem like they couldn't.
I know. Are we winding down? I think we're winding this down.
I think
down,
we're winding right? down. So one of the big things that I do want to point out, and it's the one sort of... I am very enthusiastic about the system. I really want it to work.
I really want to play SNES and Genesis games on my TV.
So there's... And the concept for the controller looks great. By the way, it looks like an Xbox 360.
It's a 360 controller with a trackpad in the middle.
Right, but looks great.
But not as stupid as the fucking Wii. Oh my God.
So, no one can figure out how this console is going to be $100. Are they, like, because no one can figure out, are they taking a loss on it? Because the hardware alone is way more than $100.
At cost, it isn't, though.
So, it's still, though, this is not an established company. They don't really have a manufacturing chain that we know of. So, for them to get it under $100, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, you can't get a cell phone for under $100.
You can if you get an Android.
Oh, you're a douche.
The thing is, I think I might pull my funding from it.
Really?
Here's the thing. If it launches, I could probably still get one on launch day if I pre-order it through Amazon when it becomes available.
I don't think getting them is going to be hard at all. I mean, minimum manufacturing, right? Like, you have to make, like, 100,000 units.
Like, I'm really not... I think I'm not down with the risk, because I feel like this whole thing is... There's weird stuff going on. I feel like it's not necessarily in the spirit of Kickstarter. It's not like I funded a record because I wanted to buy that record on
vinyl. Yeah, or a Dreamcast game.
Or a Dreamcast game, or the Jason Rohrer DS game that we're going to play soon. These are things that I felt were very genuine at the gate, and I don't know if I want to give this company $100 in August for something that's supposed to come out next March. I feel like it's not going to happen.
This is, I think, by far the most polarizing Kickstarter I've seen, right? Like, people are really torn about it. Everyone wants it to be genuine and to be real and to succeed. No one is confident in it.
Which
is weird.
I agree.
And, you know, it does bring us back to that original thought I had on Kickstarter, right? Like, is this not just a marketing tool? Like, I'm buying a console. My donation is to buy a console, but I'm not paying sales tax on it.
Yeah, dude, I just think, I don't know, man. I don't think they're on the up and up. And, like, by them saying that this is entirely crowdfunded, that makes me worry, because they need more than fucking $7 million to get this shit off the ground.
And I'm positive they have it, but we'll wait and see what happens.
So, but if they do, that lack of transparency,
But then again, lack of transparency in this industry is not uncommon. You know, it's usually not as public as this.
Well, that's the thing about, like, this industry is, like, We're not talking about the industry at this point. We're talking about, like, this Kickstarter ecosystem, and
is this more of a video game thing, or is it more of a Kickstarter thing? Is this going to be like the Pebble, or, you know, like,
I don't know. I really don't know. I think it's going to play out very interestingly. I think
it's definitely something to watch.
I think there's like this fucking shadiness there. There is a layer there that is just suspicious as fuck.
And you know what? The community has definitely latched onto it. I mean, day two of this thing, like, the article started flying out. Like, if you look at Google News or whatever search it, like, there are so many opinion pieces and so many articles about why it will fail, why it won't fail, why it's great, why it's awful. It's hard to make it out.
I don't know.
I mean, I want it to work. I really do.
Yeah, Phantom.
Or the, Pandora? Was the handheld?
Yeah.
The Linux-based one?
Yeah. Gizmodo 2. Gizmondo 2.
Yes.
Anyway, I guess we'll be right back.
I don't know that we resolved anything, but I think it was fun to talk about it.
I mean, come on. That's the essential thing.
If you're interested in the Ouya, you can go to Kickstarter.com and just type in Ouya, which is O-U-Y-A, and you'll see all about it. They do seem to release regular updates.
Yeah.
So maybe you can wait till the last minute and decide. I'm invested. I'm taking the $100-and-whatever risk.
I think I'm going to bail.
You sir are a coward. I was thinking of doing the $10,000 one, but...
No, you weren't.
No.
We'll be right back.
I wish I had that money.
We're back.
Game Club.
Scary time.
Okay, guys, if you're new to the show, and I hope you are, because that means we're growing in popularity, this is going to be the spoiler-ridden part of the show.
So every week, several weeks, sometimes these games take longer, we choose a game, both of us play through it, share our thoughts on it, because Fred and I come to games from different perspectives, we usually have varying opinions on these things, but during the course of this conversation, we are going to spoil the fuck out of the game.
I mean, there's like it's nothing. It really is nothing but spoilers.
Yeah. Like, so this game, since we already talked about mechanics and stuff last week, this is Amnesia: The Dark Descent. We finished it.
Did it finish you?
Skip ahead if you don't want to have this game spoiled.
You can see when the next segment starts in the show notes.
Yeah, I recommend actually playing this game and listening to our full Game Club on it. But, anyway.
Let's go, John. Let's go.
Spoiler time.
So, played through. Here's my you know, 50,000-yard stare version, or what's the... I totally love... This fucking bourbon is doing me into it. My bird's eye view of the game.
Yeah.
It jumps the shark near the end.
Specifically what?
The ending.
Okay, so the ending is not great.
So there's actually three different endings.
Yeah, I got the quote good ending and then I read about the other two. The thing is, I don't know. I feel like we should talk more about like how the overall story of the game, because like, yeah, the ending's not great. Let's talk about that at the end. I think the overall story of the game is good. It kept me moving.
It's good. I think near maybe the 3/4 mark of the game, I stopped caring as much as I did earlier on. Because there was I don't want to call it a twist, but there was a turn in the storyline that just progressively kept getting closer to coming to fruition.
What do you mean?
The fact that you're not really a good guy.
Oh. I was pretty... I don't know. I felt like throughout I knew that Daniel was not necessarily good.
I think, yeah.
I picked up on that a little earlier because I felt like, man, why would I fucking purposely give myself amnesia?
I mean, here's my thought about it, right? I thought they were... The way the story was progressing, they had you start thinking like, oh, maybe you aren't the guy you initially think you are. But I thought maybe they would twist it up a little bit, and maybe that's just sort of like a red herring to make you think that, and then they throw something else at you.
I don't know. I disagree. Like, I like how they explain you are saving yourself. Which, I mean, to be honest with you, like, I mean, many, many people would do. They would...
Oh, yeah, no, I mean...
Sacrifice innocent people to save themselves.
And in that regard, he is a realistic character.
Yeah.
He is a very human character.
Yeah.
The protagonist, Daniel. That being said, since he's just sort of a voice, and you don't have an image of him, and you don't have sort of a good concept of more of him than just the voice, He doesn't make for a great leading man. He's not a Vin Diesel. That's what I'm saying.
No one is. you know, I felt that he was a strong enough character. Finally meeting, what's the guy? The chained up guy?
Oh, German name.
Agrippa. Finally meeting him was, like, when I finally fucking leveled out in the game. Like, it stopped getting so fucking scared all the time. Because, like, there was another voice to interact with. Like, there was somebody telling me stuff.
Even though it was a possessed corpse.
Yeah, with his lower jaw ripped off. Somehow I found comfort in that.
Yeah.
I know the game didn't scare you, because I guess you're not a scarable...
There actually, I'll be honest, there was one jump scare that got me.
Which one?
The Iron Maiden.
Fuck yeah!
Yeah.
Oh my god!
That got me.
Yeah. That got me really bad. Like, a lot of times, and there are a couple times where there are random servants throughout the game. There are randoms besides, like, the set ones that just, like, holy fuck, that fucking guy was chasing me? I had no fucking clue. I don't play a lot of horror games. This was not very fun for me to play through.
No, I can imagine that.
This was effective, much in the way Spec Ops The Line was. And I'm going to spoil a little bit of Spec Ops for you.
Putting my fingers in my ears.
Yeah. There are, there are thematic things that are parallel between each game. Like, there are... In Spec Ops, you are not seeing reality 100% of the time. Not to say they do the exact same thing, but there are times when you are perceiving things incorrectly.
Right.
That might blow this for you. I knew that going into Spec Ops, that something like that might happen. This was an interesting week of gaming for me.
Yeah, perspective for sure. Wise.
There were a lot of scary moments for me in this game. The puzzle mechanic, like, it is a scary fucking mist.
Yeah, I mean, it really, the puzzles most of the are puzzle, not the driving force.
Most of the puzzles, I say for the most part, most of the puzzles make sense. I did turn to a guide several times, because there were mechanics that I had not necessarily seen demonstrated to me before. Like, sure. Jumping off of one of the bridges onto another to lower it, I looked that up.
See, that one I didn't have a problem with. The ones that I thought, there was one that didn't make too much sense to me, but I figured it out. Which was when you have to take the blood from the corpse.
Yeah, I looked that up as well.
I didn't look that up. I figured it out, but at the same time, I was like, this is not intuitive at all.
Yeah. Last night, like, much as you probably were, I was trying to marathon through it. And I finished a little earlier than you.
Yeah, you did. Much earlier. But the difference between 2 and 4 in the morning is
difference. I felt like I bested a lot of things through the game, so it was like, I was less reluctant to look shit up when I got stuck. I was like, nah, I'll do it.
There was only one place where I actually had to look something up, and as it turns out, what I was doing was correct, and it was just, like, I wasn't doing it right.
The throwing the rock at the thing.
So there's a point where you have to set an explosive next to a cave-in, and then you have to set it off. And I thought by setting it off, because the memo that you get says it's very volatile, and if you hit it, it can explode. I thought you just have to throw something at it, and I threw stuff at it like 100 times, and nothing happened. And then
I got
that
in the first shot. I feel
like I didn't, and I don't know, like, because the character throws like a 2-year-old child.
They're like fucking 25-pound rocks, man.
Yeah, well, fucking grow some balls, man.
Grow, be like Master Chief.
Yeah.
Overall, there were some shortcomings that come from, like, it being an indie developed game. Like, there is some polish that might be missing.
I definitely feel that maybe it was the pacing of the game, but near the end I started to feel a little bit apathetic towards it, and it became less of, because you definitely see the end coming.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty clear what's going to happen by the end.
And we'll get to that, but I near the end of the game it stopped being about being scared, because I realized, like, well, if I die I'll just respawn. And it was more about getting through the game.
There were some parts, like an hour and a half out from the ending, where I got surprised by not one of the regular servants, by one of the fucking beefed up ones. Just fucking man, even though I knew.
Oh, and that's the predefined kill, right? That's where you have to get knocked out.
That I was less fucked up by, but like there were, I don't know, there were times where like I ran and hid, like I ran, went to a corner, ducked, and like just looked away from the screen because I knew I was gonna die. I don't know. I think I'm a lot more susceptible to this bullshit than you are.
One of my actual big issues with the game, and this is the polish issue, is that so the mechanic is that you don't combat anything, right? You have to run and hide and look away and find a way to avoid things. Since there are random spawns, there was a lot of points in the game where you'll just encounter an enemy and there's just nothing you can fucking. You're just going to die.
And I think that might be an issue of it, of lack of polish. Like, you know, I am so glad that combat is not in this game. It would have been a completely different game if you could affect the enemies.
Absolutely.
I love that. I mean, that's the way horror should work. You should be powerless against this fucking thing.
You
don't want to be Sydney from fucking Scream that figure shit out at the
end. But you know how in early on in the game you can throw the meat into the water and then the invisible monster would go after it and you can like distract enemies?
That was a different.
I almost wish that was more prominent. Like I wish I could throw a rock against a wall and have one of the servants chase it as opposed to just waiting for them to dissipate.
Wait, you didn't have to use that mechanic?
Only early on.
So in the part where you're going down in the sewers, you didn't use a rock to distract that monster?
No.
Okay, so I used a rock to distract. I used a rock to distract the monster, the brute that was patrolling that area.
I think I just waited and eventually it went away.
No, because he was like patrolling the area that I figured out that I had to go down. So I went the wrong way, picked up a rock, threw it, and then fucking ran back around.
I never had that experience, actually, or at least I don't remember it. But
it was an underused mechanic. Like, I mean,
it was definitely underused. Although there is some grace to that. Like, it is nice when a mechanic isn't reused over and over again because it adds some freshness when you actually have to figure out a puzzle, as it were.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing that fucked with me in this game was like the quote unquote sanity mechanic,
right?
Because you know, say the I feel like the base level was a slight headache. The thing is, there you could get it to a level where it's like crystal clear, but there's fucked up shit happening when it says crystal clear. So, like, what it really said to me was, like, how perceptive is an insane person of their own insanity?
I wonder if that's intentional or if that's just a side effect of...
I felt like it was intentional.
Yeah.
The places where I noticed it. You know, there is other stuff we could talk about, like how maybe some of the consumables were...
useless?
Well, I feel like they were maybe a little too plentiful later on.
Did you ever use the health potions?
I did.
I never used them
because
entire game.
There were several times where I walked over those gross fleshy things where it fucking...
See, I did that, and I still never used the health potion because your health would regenerate to a certain point.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
And it was enough of a point that it didn't matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there was like 4 level of wounds.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, if I did get... There are several times where, like, yeah, an enemy caught... One of the servants caught up to me, and I would just say, fuck it.
You would die.
I would say, fuck it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you complain about it a little bit, like, you know, yeah, I know it's just going to reset me in the area. I am so glad it did, though, because I'm glad there's not some fucking hard fail state, like,
right.
Sent me back to this area.
Well, the game actually has some sort of... responsive difficulty adjustments in it. Like, if you die at the same spot enough, the monster will just go away. There was actually, I think, a jumping puzzle that I couldn't get through in more than 2 tries because I kept falling off a ledge or something like that.
Which one?
The game controls, like, Half-Life 2.
Or Half-Life 1. Yeah.
The first invisible water monster. We talked about
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that shit
There was actually one...
I got that in a couple tries, but that shit fucked with me.
If you die in the proper way or whatever, enough, like the monster, they will either add a delay to the monster spawning or take the monster away.
You have to admit that section is good at creating tension.
That was I actually liked the invisible monsters more than I liked the servants, because there was a strategy to it, and there was like a right way and a wrong way. Well, with the invisible monsters, a lot of times, like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. You just die and start over.
I felt like they weren't as much invisible as these, like, splashes were happening on top, right? But, like, I don't know. I felt like maybe, like...
Whatever. They were sort of monsters. Yeah.
So anyway.
So there were some other interesting things that were going on in the game that I just wanted to comment. I wrote some notes here. So the loading screens with the game always had, like, a little snippet of some story.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Because I felt like it was atmospheric, but yet didn't directly tie into the story.
I don't know what those things were talking about, but they were pretty good.
That is another thing. Spec Ops The Line, you should play Spec Ops The Line. There are some stuff, like, late game, have you played any of the Modern Warfare games?
No.
Like, okay, so, like, the first Modern Warfare game, or maybe it was, like, the first Call of Duty 2, you get some quotes, like, saying how bad war is. And I think it was Modern Warfare 2, you have, like, Dick Cheney quotes, and it's like, war is inevitable, let's fucking kill these towelheads. And I'm like, whoa, racist game. Chill, I just want to fucking play. But the game in these quotes, the quotes in this game are, like, fucked, right? Like, they're, like, subtle, yet fucked.
Some of them are just sort of, like, they're inconsequential until you see the other parts.
Absolutely.
But some of them are like, oh, a bad person is doing a thing here.
Yeah. The thing about Spec Ops The Line, like, some of those, like, we're reloading where you die screens would be like, press LB to do blah, blah, blah. But then, like, another time they'll be like, you are still a good person. And I'm like, I read that and I'm like, oh, fuck, this game has got me by the fucking balls. Like, you should play Spec Ops The Line. This is an important game.
I know.
But, yeah.
So things that I think could have improved the game experience. Number one, fucking map.
Disagree.
I knew you would. Here's why I think a map would work. It's not about, like, obviously the guy doesn't actually need a map. But I have trouble remembering some of those corridors.
Yeah. No, which added to the experience for me.
So you had added to the experience. To me, it started to become frustrating near the end.
There were some times where...
There's a point where it needs to not be an experience and it needs to be a game again.
There were some times where it was like, I need to run. And, oh shit, I am booking it. And, oh my god, there's a cave in here. I went the wrong fucking way. I'm going to go back. It added to the experience for me.
Well, I think that a map could be done and still work, in that the thing we talked about last week is that when you go to inventory and all that, what if the game didn't pause?
Yeah.
And I think if you had a map that you could look at, but the game didn't pause.
No, that would be amazing.
I think that would be a great addition.
You know, we tried to play Alone in the Dark, the 2008 version. If they would have taken, like, the inventory mechanic from that game, that would be fantastic. Like, the thing is, like, the game is not paused when you're in the inventory. Like, if you're accessing one of these things, it's not paused. That would be great in this game. And I agree.
So there's the door opening mechanic that we talked about last week, which I don't like.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if you're going to have that kind of mechanic, why not have a throw mechanic for the parts where you have to throw things? Where you can throw them at different strengths, depending on how far you flick your mouse or whatever, just to sort of add to that realism.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I feel like this developer did a great job
with what they had, yeah.
And they're going to grow up, I think, pretty well.
And, you know, I mentioned before, but, you know, I don't think the game needs combat at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think being able to, you know, more of a prominent, like, distract or maybe even traps or something like that. Something where you can interact with the enemies, whereas opposed to just running and praying.
And I disagree. I like how they're Michael Myers and you're Jamie Lee Curtis. You know, if this game pops up again during the Steam sale, at 10, 20 bucks, this game is still a good game.
I do, and there's expansion content, which we actually haven't touched on, yeah. So maybe there's more to it than what we're seeing.
And there's a sequel coming soon.
I do think that, you know, the story sort of jumped the shark at the end, and also didn't really make sense at the very, like, all of a sudden it goes from, like, this mystical orb to, like, some sort of, like, eternal vampire character that's trying to open a fucking portal.
Well, I mean, like, him being immortal it's pretty obvious during the whole thing, but,
And there's some sort of, like, reference to a lost love that he had or something along those lines.
Yeah, I kind of like the vagueness of that stuff, but,
It just doesn't really go very... It doesn't go anywhere. Yeah, within the contents of one game. And then the other thing I noticed is that... So there's these items that you can interact with throughout the game. They sort of look like a tennis ball holder with a
glowy bit at the top. Artifacts. They're called artifacts.
I don't know what the fuck they are.
They just give you a flashback and they tell you something more about...
I know, but I just couldn't figure out what they're supposed to be.
It sets the fucking tone.
Okay.
Anyway.
So, overall, I mean, it's on the positive side of things. I think you should play this game if you haven't. If you're listening to this and you haven't played the game...
Jesus, you're an idiot.
Dumb.
Yeah, probably don't play it. It's worth, you got the whole thing.
It's worth a try. I think before I go into Machine for Pigs, I'd like to know what they're doing with it. A little bit... Like, what are the improvements they've made as a company?
The thing is, it's going to cost, like, $20. Like, it's not going to be a huge investment.
No, and I also would like... I don't want to say I want a longer game, but I want a game that keeps me more invested in it as I play through.
This was the perfect length.
Okay.
It was a nice length.
Well, that's because you're a pussy.
7-8 hours. Like, that was good.
You're a pussy.
So,
you're a fucking sissy Mary fucking pussy.
So what's up next week?
So next week, we're keeping with our horror game theme of all things, John, even though you're a fucking pussy.
Yeah, I feel like... Does this count as my choice? Yeah, whatever. Next week is The Walking Dead Chapter 2.
Because we liked the first one just that much.
I feel like we're going to do this for every chapter.
I think so. I mean, one was phenomenal, and I think two is just going to be... Everything I've heard is two is better.
It's the best thing Telltale's ever done.
Yeah.
So, with that, we'll be right back.
Smart went crazy. Truth went trendy. The story got lazy, so I rewrote the ending. Manipulated the entry, more user-friendly. Now a city full of pain pills and tattoos defend me. I waver from the dead to the half-dead. Gray space between fan base and the crackhead. Sunset sailboat set course for hell. A cross and a hammer, but you'll have to get some nails. Take credit for anything embedded in the edit, as long as you meant it when you said it. And all of the kids laugh when you admit that it might have been witchcraft that made my noose fit bad. Well, I'ma act like I don't give a make love. Take what I got to teach everyone to break stuff. I'ma act like there's poison in the pancakes and amputate the one that wasn't loyal with the handshake. Proud to know ya, Minnesota missile never sold coke, and I never had to hold a pistol. Civil and simple, but set the freak show loose on the nipple. Watch your whole fucking titty ripple. It's why we battle, it's why we travel. It's why the mascot thinks that I'm an asshole. We made the team without putting on a uniform. Smart went nuts and rode a unicorn through the storm.
It's time to say goodbye, Fred.
God damn it, I hate saying goodbye. Hey, you know something we forgot to mention before?
Mm-hmm.
It ties into every segment we've done already today. If you're going to play The Walking Dead with us and you haven't bought it yet, it's on sale on Steam right now. You can get all 5 chapters for, I think it's $15.
No, it's done being $15, but it's up to $18.25.
Which is still cheaper than Xbox Live?
Yeah, because like we got the first chapter on Xbox, and also it continues off the save if you missed the previous game.
There's decisions that you make that are important.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep on
played
Xbox Live.
Yeah, me too. And if you haven't played it yet, pick it up on Steam. Because it's like less than $20.
And I feel like controller versus mouse and keyboard don't really make a huge difference
and
in this game at all.
You can just plug your fucking Xbox controller in. You have a wired one. So,
John, shout-outs time.
Shout-outs time.
So, listeners, if you'd like to shout out to us, if you'd like to have your letter read online, on the internet,
online,
on the show, we'll do that for you. All you got to do is email us at letters@fantasticneighborhood.com. You can catch us on our Facebook page, or you can call us. We have a phone number. We're that professional.
It's 720-HOODIE-6.
That's 720 Hoodie 6.
Yeah. We'd tell you the numbers, but we're bad at math.
Go get a rotary phone and figure it out. You know, it always astounds me that you could actually probably pick up a rotary phone right now and call a Google Voice number.
You absolutely could.
Oh,
I feel like I could probably plug a rotary phone in my phone number, which is from fucking Cablevision. Like, it's a cable phone number.
You could also take that same rotary phone and kill a jaguar if it was attacking you.
Or a zombie, if you're in a video game. Shout outs. Obviously, gotta say hey to Will Gallego, who's the only person that...
Friend of the show, Will Gallego.
Yeah, who commented, apparently I spelled it ooh-yah when it's ooh-yah. So, my bad, Will.
Can't wait for the oh yeah to come out.
You douche. all right.
So we actually have this is a first, John, and I'm excited to read this.
No, I'm going to read this.
You want to read it? So
yeah. You're going to cream yourself.
I'm going to read the intro though. So we have a fan letter. Mm-hmm. You and me.
Yep.
Us schmucky fucking podcast hosts have a fan letter. And this is I'm just using first name. This is from Maxim in Canada.
Yeah, so Maxim writes, and he says, I would like to apologize, and I believe apology might have been the subject line. I would like to apologize for my reaction when I received a postcard of your podcast at PAX East this year. My friends and I were like, OMG, look at those blanks. Wait, is blanks your insertion?
Expletive deleted, because I know that's a word you don't
look
like
at those
to use.
R words, who are not popular enough to be advertised on the iTunes Store main page. Well, shortly after PAX East, and on my way home from university, which is what they call college in Canada.
Or school.
I gave you guys a shot, and I was totally 100% wrong. You're the sun in my sky, the butter on my bread, the hot in my dog. Do they have hot dogs in Canada?
They probably do, but they probably call them like backlogs or something. You know,
they're
like
sweater buddies. got it. Just kidding. I'm trying to say that you're now my favorite podcast. Good job, Maxim. Thank you so much, and we are going to send you a prize through the probably through the mail, because I don't know if you have Steam up there.
Yeah, well, that's right. They're in another country.
Thank you so much
for listening.
Yeah, write us back with your mailing address, and we're going to send you a physical game in the mail, assuming you have an Xbox 360. So, with that...
John, if our listeners want to follow us or find out more information about us, where can they go?
They can find you on Twitter.
They can find me on Twitter.
You're Proto Addict.
And I've been posting more recently.
I have been shitting more, so I've been posting more, because the only time I access Twitter is when I'm pooping.
By the way, I actually did post that recently, because I was trying to prove to someone
that you
could tweet
gross,
from anywhere.
Man.
Poop references. Anyway, if you'd like, you can check us out on our website at fantasticneighborhood.com.
Forgot to mention me. I'm at Hey John Anderson.
No one wants to follow
It's J-O-N Anderson. The show is at Fantastic Hood at Fred Everett.
You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Fantastic Hood, and you can find the show on Twitter at Fantastic Hood.
Yeah.
And to all our hoodlums out there, we appreciate you listening. And if you haven't yet, please rate us on iTunes.
Yes. Awesome. So do we have a way to say goodbye?
I don't know. I think we need a new best episode ever. You wanna challenge me, but not all the wax up around here is on the
handful. That's balls. All blah blah blah. That's cool.
So, John.
Oh, you gonna make me talk about it?
Do you want me to just go through my list? The next two are pretty quick.
Yeah. All right. Let's do it.
I'm not going to have that problem with the wife, believe me.
I'm glad we're both atheists, me and my wife. Oh, also, so I refer to you in casual conversations, my partner, like, because, you know, we're partners. And, like, I guess that might sound weird sometimes.
It's funny, I refer to you in casual conversation as my bestest friend ever.
That's weird, because we're not.
Damn.